Manager in Microsoft's Enterprise Cloud Organization, and I'm very excited to be talking to you today about NanoServer, the future of Windows Server. Here's a quick look at the agenda of all the topics we're going to be covering in our short talk today. First, we're going to talk about what we heard from our customers and what fueled the creation of NanoServer, our journey through the cloud and our journey through server, and how we arrived at NanoServer as the OS, the server OS for a Microsoft for the next 25 years. We're going to be talking about NanoServer as an application platform. We'll show you some of the very, very promising preliminary results. And we'll be talking about the roadmap and the steps ahead. First, we've been hearing from our customers very consistently over the last 10 years that reboots are bad for business. Reboots disrupt the business. Downtime is never something that's desired. It takes a long time to actually get the system back up again. And then we also heard the feedback about the server images. Server images are large. Even server core is like 5 gigabytes in terms of image size. That takes up a lot of storage space, and it also takes up a long time over the network, consumes network resources. Last but certainly not least, we heard about the consumption, the resource consumption of our operating systems. And the desire of our customers was, if your operating systems consume fewer resources, we can actually increase the VM density, for example, on our servers. We've all read the headlines from Staples to Home Depot, from Sony to Target. Cyber attacks have been actually occupying headlines for quite some time. This basically led our customers to conclude that they just want the components they need on server. A one-size-fits-all solution where they have full server with roles and features all lit up is not an option. Let's go real quick through our server journey and start with Windows NT back then. Even before that, maybe, the difference between server and client were a bit blurred. Back then, there was just one registry key that can actually make you switch from client to server. I believe it was Mark Rusinovich who actually found out about that registry key. By the time we actually got to Server 2008, we introduced Server Core. Back then, there was no path to upgrade from Server Core to full server and back down again. But that came afterwards in 2008 R2. The separation between client and server were much, much clearer at that point in time. And with Windows Server 2012, with the introduction of 2012, we actually, Server Core became the nucleus of the entire server stack. If you notice the squares on top of the rectangles, they basically represent the roles and features that you can add to server. This is important when we discuss how NanoServer is different in that regards. Roles and features are always baked into the server image. Whenever you want to light up a role or a feature, you basically just light it up from the GUI or from the command line using PowerShell. Let's talk about our cloud journey. Patches and reboots interrupt service delivery. We learned that firsthand. Azure does not have a live migration, so therefore reboots absolutely disrupt the business. And if you multiply the number of servers that Azure uses, the humongous number of servers, by the OS resource consumption, you actually get a lot of dollar signs in terms of loss. Case in point, let's talk about the cloud platform solution. In the fall of 2014, we introduced cloud platform system or cloud platform solution, which is basically a cloud in a box. You can fill up anywhere from 1 to 4 racks. And when fully loaded, we're talking about perhaps 8,000 VMs. So with 8,000 VMs, if we're very optimistic and we say, for example, 2 gigabytes of a patch for each one of them, we're talking about a 16 terabyte patch just to patch the operating system, and that uses up a lot of network resources. The second conclusion we used, the second design point, if you will, for NanoServer was that we absolutely need a server operating system that is designed for the cloud, as opposed to something that was shoehorned into being cloud ready or cloud enabled. And the solution, the answer to those customer voices, to the design points that we mentioned is NanoServer. And NanoServer is our next step in that journey for cloud and for server. NanoServer is, at least at a high level, basically the answer to solutions where you need a born-in-the-cloud application server. When you talk about containers, NanoServer should be the operating system you're thinking about. Our traditional workloads are still there for server core. Server core is still the answer to backward compatibility. And full server, the full GUI, the full desktop experience is reserved for things like the RDS experience and not for regular server loads. We mentioned the squares on top of the rectangles a few slides back, and you mentioned that they represent the roles and features that were always baked into the operating system for server. With NanoServer, we use something called the zero footprint model. In other words, any roles and features are not available inside the operating system. The operating system itself is very small. We'll talk about the numbers a little later. But those roles and features have to actually be copied into the operating system and be added to it so that it can keep its very, very tiny footprint. We call that the zero footprint model. We had three major scenarios in mind for NanoServer. The first one is we wanted NanoServer to be the absolute best Microsoft offering for a virtualization server, for a Hyper-V server. The second scenario was we also wanted NanoServer to be the best Microsoft offering for a storage server, your scale-out file server, your classic file server, clustered. And the third main scenario we wanted for NanoServer is to be the absolute best offering for the new born-in-the-cloud applications. We wanted that to be the born-in-the-cloud application server. Whether it's in a container, in a VM, or on a physical machine, NanoServer is actually ubiquitous in that sense. The good news is any driver that runs, that works fine on server core and full server will automatically run on NanoServer as well. We first started by baking anti-malware Windows Defender into the base image of NanoServer, but then our customers gave us the feedback that they sometimes use third-party anti-malware software or none at all. They actually have other hardware solutions perhaps for security. And that prompted us to basically make anti-malware an optional package, like all the other packages and roles and features that you can include in NanoServer. With the technical preview 4 of NanoServer, you can actually use the System Center Operations Manager agent and the System Center Virtual Machine Manager agent as well. So in other words, you can manage a NanoServer machine from Operations Manager and from Virtual Machine Manager. How does management work? So we said it was a tiny operating system. Does it have a GUI? No. So the answer to that is remote management. Whether you use a command line, for example, PowerShell or WMI, or you use graphical user interfaces, such as Server Manager, for example, you can use Server Manager and remotely manage NanoServer, or Hyper-V Manager, Failover Cluster Manager, Perf Monitor, Event Viewer, and so on and so forth. And we're also going to show the server management tools, or we used to call them remote server management tools, which are web-based, look just like Azure, because they use the same framework that Azure uses, the Azure portal uses. And you can manage basically a large part of your NanoServer system using those server management tools. The idea is to never have to sit in front of a server. Remote management should be the way to manage any server. Like one of my colleagues always says, we love GUIs, we love servers, but they just don't belong together. GUIs belong on rich clients, servers should be lean, mean, and GUI-less. You can configure, you can manage your entire system using PowerShell, which is the imperative way, or you can use PowerShell's desired state configuration, which is the declarative way. And you can use, you can integrate into DevOps toolchains and CI. Now, NanoServer uses something called PowerShell Core. The only difference between PowerShell Core and regular PowerShell is that regular PowerShell is built on top of the full .NET framework, which is not there on NanoServer. Instead, NanoServer is running on .NET Core, which is a tiny, tiny subset of the .NET framework. And the PowerShell team has basically done an excellent job of refactoring all the code to run on the on .NET Core and the Core CLR. However, the good news is the full PowerShell language is available on NanoServer. In fact, you can use any type of commandlets, whether they're C# commandlets, SIM commandlets, or PowerShell script commandlets, provided that they don't use functions or APIs that are not available on NanoServer. I would actually disagree with the word limited set of commandlets initially, but yes, it's not the full set of commandlets that you can find on full PowerShell, but nonetheless, we're talking about the majority of what counts, of what you need and depend on for your business for managing a server are actually there. Some very famous examples include getWMIObject. This is a very popular commandlet. It's not available on NanoServer, but for example, getSimInstance is there, and it is a superset of getWMIObject. So yes, you might have to do some changes to your existing scripts, but it doesn't mean that you're actually limited in terms of what you can and cannot manage. Let's actually go to a quick demo of PowerShell. So over here, I have a, let me just make this bigger. I have a full server machine. I also have three other VMs that are running. One of them is running a DNS server on NanoServer and two DNS clients also on NanoServer. So over here, let's just go ahead and start by remoting into this DNS server. Remember, I'm running on a full server machine and I'm now remoting into my DNS server. I had to just basically created the variable for IP address, created a session object and entered that session. Now I'm inside. Again, familiar commands like ipconfig, for example, you can continue to use those, hostname. All of the commands that you're used to in your current management, you can still continue using. And of course, you can also use the PowerShell equivalent of those commands. So here's the PowerShell equivalent of ipconfig, getNetIPConfiguration. There you go. And then we also talked about getWMIObject not being there. So if we run this command, we're going to get an error. But get some instance, and notice that the parameters are pretty much the same. So we're using the same class, which is Win32 Computer System. We can still pipe the format list. It's pretty much, it's very close. I don't think it's identical. The parameter set is not identical, so there may be some changes you'd have to make to the syntax, but nonetheless, the functionality itself and is identical, and the parameters are very similar. So here we do get module, for example, to see how many modules are actually loaded into a NanoServer when you find that it's a very small list. Again, keeping with the idea of having a very small server and just what you need, just enough OS is basically what we call this. Now, if we do a list available with get module, it actually lists all the modules that I could install on my in my PowerShell session. And if we do a get command, a lot of commands are going to fly by. There's just a lot of them. So let's just cut this short and do a quick measure. And we see that we have like 919 built-in commandlets in PowerShell. Again, for all intents and purposes, you're probably not going to be missing any of the commandlets. But in case you do, by all means, let us know. Send email to nanoserver@microsoft.com and let us know which commandlets are missing from your NanoServer. Here, let's just go ahead and import the DNS server module. I always do a dash verbose because it shows me all the commandlets that it imports as it's doing that. And if we do an explicit get command for the module, you actually find that there's a ton of commandlets that came with the DNS server. The DNS server team has done an excellent job of actually providing support for all DNS server commandlets on NanoServer. Here is the registry key that will show you what flavor, what deployment option of server we're running. In this case, it says we're running NanoServer proof, so you don't have to take my word for it. And here we're actually listing all the services that have a DNS that start with DNS. that have DNS in them, and that's a DNS server role running actually. So let's exit out of that session. And now I'm going to show you how the new copy item parameters work for copying to and from sessions. So locally, I'm just going to create a folder called ctemp. Let's do that. Let's look at the content of that folder. Oh, we have something in it already. So delete ctemp dism log. Now let's do that again. All right. So now there's nothing in it. And here's the new parameter for copy item is an old commandlet. Copy, of course, is the alias to copy item. But the PowerShell team introduced two new parameters to it, from session and to session. In other words, I can finally copy files from a machine to a remote machine and vice versa. So here we're just going to copy, for example, I'm on full server, and I'm going to copy the DISM logs from a remote nano server machine, in this case, my remote DNS server. So let's do that. And let's check our temp directory again and see if the file was copied successfully. And it was, right? Let's try to, for example, resolve a DNS name like Contoso TVC, for example, for Technic Virtual Conference. And if we do that, we're hopefully going to get an error because it says it will should say I don't know anything about contosotvc.com. So we're waiting. Yep, it says, well, I don't know anything about that. So let's go back to our DNS server. Enter that session. And where the service is running. Yeah, let's actually make sure that the service is running. There we go. This is the DNS client and the DNS server service. All right. Let's add that primary zone, which is contosotvc.com. All right. That's done. And now let's add the resource record. And we're done. Let's exit that session and try again to see if it will now be able to resolve the contosotvc.com DNS name. Let's do that. Resolve. Timeout expired. You can take my word for it. It did work before. Sorry about that. Don't know why it's not working right now, but it should work. All right. Back to there we go. Back to the presentation. So we talked about PowerShell. We saw how PowerShell, just to get a feel for what a remote PowerShell feels like, it's pretty much the same experience that we have with remote PowerShell today, if you've used PowerShell. But what if you want to use a GUI? Remote server management tools are web-based. They look identical to the way an Azure portal looks because they're built on the same Ibiza framework that the Azure portal is built on. So it's a very familiar UI. But the idea is not to add a new way of managing your servers. In other words, you could be thinking, well, hold on a second. I already have Server Manager. I already have Hyper-V Manager. I have Failover Host Manager. The initial idea was to basically replace all the GUIs that were on server that were not remotable. So think, for example, of the task list. Of Perfmon, Event Viewer, although Event Viewer I think is remotable, but things like the Registry Editor is not remotable. So all of those GUIs that were built into server are now being replaced with this remote web-based tool we call SMT or Server Management Tools. And the idea is to have a one-stop shop, to have one way of managing through command line, which is PowerShell, and to have one way of managing through a GUI, which will be the server management tools. I'd love to show you a demo of this. So let's switch over to this demo. You'll notice here that I've already done the login, and as soon as I log in, I used actually that machine, I entered my administrator credentials, and I see my essentials, a blade is what they're called, I think. Here, I can take a look at the CPU usage. I can click on it. Another blade will open up and show me the details of that, the CPU performance. Same thing goes for memory. I can click on that and see actually more details about memory usage on my nano server. Again, I'm remoting into a nano server, and I'm using these server management tools, which are web-based. I'm using the Edge browser here. Again, I close the blade. I have network adapters. Let's click on that. And I can actually continue doing that. It found one network adapter and gave me the IP address. I can actually look at the network traffic and more information on the network adapter. Close the blade, go back. And here's disk usage, for example, and so on and so forth. You get the picture. So I can always drill into and now when I'm done with essentials, I can basically look at settings, and you'll find a plethora of tools that you can leverage as well. Starting with the audit logs, right? There you go. To some system properties, hardware information. Here's your host name, computer name. You can actually change it here. You can join a domain or a work group. Pretty much what you're expecting from a rich GUI, all in that tiny web-based tool. Same thing here, you can add local administrators, some more IP address information. Here's device manager, you'll actually see bangs on devices that are not working on that machine. It's pretty much a very rich experience that is fully remote and web-based as well. Event viewer. You can drill into any one of those, and so on and so forth. I'm actually just gonna, for the sake of time, just move on. Here is Power as well. So it does the, you remember the three lines that I highlighted in the PowerShell demo, basically create an IP address and create a session object and enter that PS session. It basically does that on your behalf. It knows which machine you're managing. Right now it's one-to-one. Those tools actually target one machine at a time. So it knows which machine, you already entered your network credentials, your admin credentials. So it basically does that enter PS session for you on your behalf. And you find yourself basically at a PowerShell prompt, and you can do the exact same things we did before. You can do get module, it shows me which modules are loaded, absolutely none right there. Get module dash list available. I did tab completion as well, so you have full tab completion support over here. So it's a rich PowerShell environment. We call it Power or PowerShell Web Access that is actually built in. So in other words, hey, a hybrid scripting or GUI can actually be used from the same set of tools. Let's close that blade and look at processes, for example. Here, I'm looking at the equivalent of task of my task list. And over here, I can actually right click. And if applicable, I can actually see what the context menu would be. I can actually end the process. I can create a process dump and so on and so forth. Let's take a look at this guy. Yeah, I can end the process or I can create a process dump, for example, which I don't want to do right now. All right, registry editor. Here, let's go HK local machine, for example. You look at all your keys. Here's software, Microsoft, your exact same familiar registry editor, and you can actually change values as well. Let's go to cryptography, for example. You get the picture. Basically, it opens up a blade every time you go into another level. And it allows you to change values of keys. Rules and features, here's what's installed and what's not installed. You can actually click on state to see which ones are installed or uninstalled. You can sort by whatever thing is convenient for you. And again, you can take a look at the services that are running on your remote nano server machine. And again, here you have a context menu as well. You can right-click and stop a service, start a service, or change the way its startup type is configured. So this, in a nutshell, is what the server management tools look like, or RSMT, or remote server management tools, as we call them as well. All right. Setup and boot event collection is something else I'd like to talk about. It is not NanoServer specific. This actually applies to all of server. And here's the idea behind it. Event logs are great. ETW events are wonderful, but that's all after the system has booted. What about from the time I turn on the physical machine or the virtual machine until the time the operating system is up and running and ETW is actually sending events? What about that period of time? What if a machine never boots? Especially in a data center scenario, we're not talking about one machine, we're talking about tens, hundreds, possibly thousands of machines in a single data center. How can I collect that information that will actually tell me why certain machines didn't even start up in the first place? And that's basically where setup and boot event collection comes into play. You can actually, it basically collects logs, boot logs, using KDNet, the KDNet protocol, from physical and from virtual machines into a central server that you configure. And then you can use your favorite analysis tools to mine this information from the central server. To recap, we have basically seen PowerShell managing NanoServer. We've seen the server management tools manage NanoServer. But the idea is to adopt a DevOps mindset, which Jeffrey Snover keeps saying, treat servers like cattle, not like pets. Do not have a one-on-one relationship with your server. Do not give it a name. Do not be attached to it. If worst comes to worst, then basically it should be perfectly fine and quick to flatten the server, redeploy a server in seconds, not minutes and not hours, and be up and running in seconds. And that's basically the idea behind NanoServer. The idea is never to have to sit in front of a server again. We love GUIs, we love servers, but they just don't belong together. And as you saw, there is a combination. If you want to use a command line, you can use command line. If you want to use a GUI to manage your server, you can do that as well. And in fact, RSMT or SMT provides a hybrid approach as well with PowA. What is NanoServer? What is the relationship between NanoServer and Windows Server 2016? So in the past, we had SKUs such as Standard and Data Center, and you had deployment options. When you basically purchase your Windows Server DVD or ISO media, you can choose during installation whether you want to install Server Core or a full server. Right now, we just added a third deployment option, and that's NanoServer. Unlike Server Core and full server, it will not be part of the setup process again because it has no GUI at all. Instead, there's actually a NanoServer folder on the media. And that folder contains all the roles and features, contains the WIM image, basically, of NanoServer. It contains a PowerShell module that will allow you to create any type of image you want from that WIM image, whether it's in WIM, VHD, VHDX, you name it. For a physical machine, for a virtual machine, you can name containers, for Azure. And it contains all the roles and features that you want to add to your NanoServer, which, again, you can use from that module. We mentioned that real quick, but it's basically the idea is that there's a PowerShell module that you import into your PowerShell session on your client machine. And you basically create a new image using new NanoServer image, and you specify anything and everything you want, from what your target is, whether you're targeting a physical machine or not, what type of format you want your NanoServer image to be in, WIM, Windows Image, VHD, or VHDX, whether you want, for example, what roles and features you want for the NanoServer image. Do you want it to be a Hyper-V server, a storage server, a born in the cloud application server? Do you want to add IIS? Do you want to add the SCVMM agent, and so on and so forth? You can specify a computer name. You can enter your admin credentials. You can pretty much do everything with that one line. It's a rather long line, but with that one command of new NanoServer image. This goes into some detail of how to customize your NanoServer image, basically. Some things are required. You basically have to tell the commandlet what you're targeting and what your format is, but some things are optional as well. Setting a computer name, for example, is an optional thing. You don't have to do that. It will create one for you. Joining a domain, doing dual boot, these are things that you can add as well. You can use one of the packages. So one of the optional packages that we make available for NanoServer is the OEM drivers package. For convenience, if you just want to test something on hardware, it's very easy to, it's very easy to add the OEM drivers package and therefore basically get the standard, if you will, the standard drivers for hardware that was for all the drivers that were shipping inbox in ServerCore in 2012 R2. We basically package those and make the OEM drivers package. So for convenience purposes, for quick test purposes, you may want to actually use it, and that's very convenient. It's only, I think, 19 megs or so. It's not a big package. On the other hand, if you want to stay with a very lean image, you might want to just pick the drivers that you need for your hardware. And that's pretty much what you can do with DISM explicitly, or you can go and use that with a new NanoServer image as well. We talked about that in the previous slide, new NanoServer image. One of the options is to specify a driver's path. So you can either add the OEM drivers package or specify a folder where you've actually downloaded just the drivers that you need for your hardware, and you can specify that, and you can specify both as well. You can specify, things will be a little different in the next technical preview, but for technical preview 4, you can basically specify what kind of format you want, VHD or VHDX. And we blogged about the third format, which is WIM. In the next technical preview, all of these will be combined. It's going to be a lot easier to specify your desired NanoServer image. Installing roles and features are, again, can be part of new NanoServer image. If you want to go and look at the existing roles and features, take a look at the packages folder, which is under NanoServer in the Windows Media or Windows Server Media or in the ISO. And you can actually add individual ones using DISM as well. So basically, you can use new NanoServer image to do everything for you, or if you want to actually handcraft everything you do, including adding the roles and features or packages, then you can do that with DISM for sure. Let's talk about installation. MSI is not supported on NanoServer. The MSI format is not supported on NanoServer. And that actually has two reasons. One of them is basically that the MSI format it doesn't always guarantee a clean uninstall. How many times have we installed packages that were using MSI and they left some dangling files somewhere on our hard drive and some dangling entries in our registry, and cleaning up is actually never easy without really, really specialized tools. And it actually slows down the system over time. We absolutely do not want that on server. The second reason for MSI, for not using MSI, is MSI's dependency, huge dependency on the full .NET framework, which, as I said earlier, does not exist on NanoServer. We have a tiny subset called .NET Core. So MSI's dependency on the full .NET framework would have actually prompted us to pull in a large chunk of .NET framework, which basically will grow the image of NanoServer and defeat the purpose of having a tiny, tiny operating system there. So what's the alternative? If we don't have MSI, what exactly is the alternative? The alternative is what we call WSA, which is the Windows Server Application Installer. Unlike MSI, with WSA, you are guaranteed to have a super clean uninstall, no more dangling files on the hard drive, and no more registry entries after uninstall. And it's basically declarative. It's very easy to declare what you want in your installation. Custom actions are not allowed. Custom actions were the reason for MSI being unpredictable. So of course they're not allowed in WSA. And the plan is for, again, WSA, the Windows Server Application Installer, just like we talked about setup and boot event collection, is to cover all of server. This is not just a nano server thing. This is for all of server. All right, so let's take a step back. I talked about remote management and only remote management. So I cannot walk up to my server and actually do anything there. There's no command line, there's nothing. What happens if I lose connectivity to my nano server? What happens then? In those cases, and only for those cases, we have a recovery console. You can walk up to your server and basically have recover basically the network connectivity issues. You can actually set up a static IP address. You can set up subscribing to DHCP and so on and so forth. I'll actually show you, how about I show you a demo of that? Let's do that. Let's take a look at, is that the guy? Sure, well, that's one of them. So as you can see here, this is a flashback to the 1960s, 1970s, I don't know. It looks like a very old screen. And as soon as you actually log in and enter your admin credentials, you see some information like the computer name, whether you're joined to a domain or a work group, which operating system you're using. The OS here basically says Tuva at the end, which used to be the code name for a nano server. But yeah, this will change. The date and so on and so forth, the local date and time, the time zone, and any network adapters that you have. Let me just make this a little bigger. You'll notice here, I don't know if you can see that on your screen or not, but the word networking at the bottom there is actually a brighter white than the word firewall underneath it. So that means that it's currently selected. So if I hit enter, I can basically go into that, which is the network. It shows me all of my network adapters. In this case, I only have one network adapter. I can hit enter again, and I can see a list of all the network properties and settings that I have. You'll also notice at the very bottom that I have my menu, my cheat sheet is there. I can scroll up and down. I can escape to go back one level. I can also toggle, enable, or disable this network adapter, and I can press F10 to look at the routing table, right? Here are the things you can do. You can basically add a route to the routing table. Again, this is what you're looking at is what you can download and use today. This is the technical preview for release of Server 2016. In later versions, you'll be able to do more, such as removing a route, for example. Okay, I'll escape and go back. I can also press F11 to take a look at the IPv4 settings. In this case, I disabled DHCP and assigned it a static IP address. I can change any and all of that. Again, you have to tab through, and you'll notice that the white highlight is actually brighter on the selected item, and so on and so forth. Of course, I can do the same thing with F12 and IPv6 settings. So let's go back and escape. Back to here. You'll notice again that there's firewall, so I'll go there. I hit enter, and I'll see all the rules, all the firewall rules, and their current state. So let's go, for example, the one that I care about most is 5985, is basically port 5985 for WinRM, which is the port I need. WinRM is what I need for PowerShell remote management. So I'm gonna go in there and look at that rule, for example. And it's going to tell me that this is an inbound rule that covers domain and private, right? And enabled equals yes. And at the bottom there, I can again use F4 to disable the rule. If I escape out and go down one, I'll see, again, local port 5985, also inbound, but this is the public profile for the same rule. And again, I can enable and disable the rule. That's it in a nutshell. The recovery console is not meant to be a super cool GUI. In fact, the idea of the recovery console is to only recover network connectivity so you can go back to the cool tools such as remote server management tools, or if you want to use the legacy tools as well, and of course, PowerShell remote management as well. Let's talk about NanoServer as an application platform. We talked about the three main scenarios for which we designed NanoServer, and the third scenario was basically the scenario of an application server for born in the cloud applications. Think of your PaaS v2, Node.js, ASP.NET Core, it used to be called ASP.NET 5 applications. This is the modern. If you have an old legacy ASP.NET application running on a legacy IIS server, this is not the server for you. But if you're running ASP.NET Core, ASP.NET 5, on IIS, on NanoServer, this is definitely the server for you. And not just Microsoft technology, we're talking about Node.js, we're talking about PaaS v2, even Microsoft and non-Microsoft technologies for born in the cloud applications. NanoServer, the idea of NanoServer is for it to be ubiquitous. It should not matter as a developer whether I'm targeting a physical machine, a virtual machine, or NanoServer in a container. To me, that should be transparent. It says future editions on the slide, but desired state configuration is actually very real. I have a demo of desired state configuration. If we have time, I might actually show it at the end. This is no longer a future edition. It's great to have both sides of the coin. PowerShell is imperative. It talks to the system and says, do this, do that. And desired state configuration is the flip side of it, which basically says, here's what I want my system to behave like, make it so. Let's talk about developing on server. NanoServer is the nucleus. Server core is there for compatibility, and the full client desktop experience is there only for very specialized needs, such as RDS, for example. Developers should definitely target NanoServer. Again, one of the reasons is because it's so ubiquitous, because it can run in a container just as it can run on a huge server, on a physical server or in a virtual machine. Let's talk about the developer experience. This is probably the first time that Windows Server has had its own developer experience. In the past, the message was always go develop on whatever technology is currently hip on clients, such as WinForms or WPF or what have you. And then whatever, when you've done development, basically run it on server because the stack is almost identical, so you can run whatever apps you develop. With NanoServer and the extremely reduced footprint of NanoServer, we can no longer do that. So what we did was actually develop a first-class developer experience for native applications, for example. So in Visual Studio, you actually have, you can download a Visual Studio template that will pull in the right libraries and define the right symbols so that it pulls in the right headers. You have full IntelliSense and full error squiggle support when you're developing a native application in C++. And you also have full remote debugging capability to a NanoServer machine. And that machine could be physical or virtual, of course. Not only for native applications, but also for managed applications. Now, what if you already have an existing tool that you either developed or that you rely on for managing NanoServer, for managing server? So how can you quickly test to see if this tool will actually run on NanoServer or not? If you're using the technical preview 4 release of NanoServer, make sure you include the reverse forward as optional package. And when you do that, it basically provides a routing, if you will, to make sure that if this tool runs on NanoServer, it will actually run directly on NanoServer. We have had a lot of success with using reverse forwarders. Let me give you an idea of how that works. Let's assume, for example, we have three libraries in regular server, A, B, and C.dll. And NanoServer doesn't have any of those A, B, or C DLLs. It has E.dll. But E.dll on NanoServer contains maybe 70% of the APIs that are available combined in A, B, and C.dll. So typically, without reverse forwarders, if an application runs and it's looking explicitly for B.dll or C.dll or A.dll, it's going to throw an error, not even start. With reverse forwarders, it basically says, you have a dependency on B or C or A.dll. I know where to find the APIs you're looking for. They're actually in E.dll. So if those APIs are available and supported on NanoServer, then your tool will run just automatically. This does not eliminate the need to refactor. So in other words, you still have to go back, if you actually own the code, to go back and re-link your code to make sure that it runs on NanoServer without reverse forwarders. But the reverse forwarders package is actually tiny, so you don't have to worry about the size and footprint of that package. NanoServer is optimized for containers. Let's talk about what a container is. In virtual machines, in traditional virtual machines, you basically do hardware virtualization. You virtualize the hardware, and each VM has its own operating system and application. I like the three-layer model here, where basically you virtualize the bottom layer, which is hardware in this case, and you have, for each virtual machine, you have its own operating system and its own applications. With containers, we basically have a virtualization of the kernel itself. So they all share the same kernel, and the container basically runs separate processes. Let's talk about some preliminary results. I think we talked a lot about what NanoServer has and what it doesn't have and all the tools that I can use to manage. I think the question that will probably occupy your mind right now is, why should I even go through the trouble of doing something new? Why should I worry? Why should I even care about NanoServer? Here is what we did. We monitored NanoServer, Server Core, and Full Server for 12 months, for an entire year. And we compared the servicing patches for the three flavors, for the three deployment options. And we found that over an entire year, only 9 important bulletins applied to NanoServer versus 23 for Server Core versus 26 for Full Server. When it comes to critical bulletins, only 2 applied to NanoServer, 8 to Server Core, and 23 to Full Server. And of course, the number of reboots, only 3 reboots would have been necessary for NanoServer for an entire year versus 6, twice as many, for Server Core, and 11 for Full Server, almost every month. We're actually trying to bring that number 3 down to 2, perhaps even 1 in the not distant future. And let's talk about security. So we talked about serviceability, service improvements. Let's talk about security improvements. Now we're not talking about Full Server at all. We're just comparing NanoServer to Server Core. We're talking about a 25% improvement in the number of drivers that need to be loaded for the operating system to be fully functional, a 40% improvement in the number of services that need to be running, and almost 1/3, somewhere between a third and a half of the ports that need to be open. This is actually only 11 ports have to be open on NanoServer to be fully functional, 15 more ports for Server Core to be fully functional. We also talked about resource utilization early on in the talk, if you remember when we talked about the cloud platform solution and about Azure, and we talked about resource utilization then. Well, 20% improvement in the number of processes that need to run. Almost 1/3 of the boot I/O is needed on NanoServer versus Server Core. And less than half of the kernel memory is used by NanoServer versus Server Core. Let's talk about deployment improvements. This is my favorite slide. I used an old machine in my office to set up NanoServer and to set up Server Core, and I compared the two. And it actually took 40 seconds to set up NanoServer from scratch versus 5 minutes for Server Core. And when you look at the footprint, NanoServer is just 400 megabytes. That's the entire operating system with PowerShell and WMI and everything in it. If you want to add a role, for example, like a Hyper-V, you add 50 megabytes to the 400 megabytes, and you have a 450 megabyte, super, super lean Hyper-V server. So just to give you an idea of how big server core is, we're talking about in excess of 5 gigabytes for server core. So the difference is just huge. It's basically an order of magnitude difference between nano server and server core. So what is our roadmap? We started by saying, or at least the title of the talk is Nano Server, the Future of Windows Server Starts Now. We absolutely believe in Nano Server as our way forward for server. This is the future of server. We have been wanting to make a tiny server image that is very secure, with very few patches, few reboots, and very manageable at the same time for a really long time. Nano Server was not born yesterday. It's actually over 10 years in the making. It is only now possible with the advent of a lot of technologies around Microsoft that made it happen. And this is definitely the future of server for sure. Having said that, I also want to make sure that you understand that it's not going to replace server core and full server for anything and everything. So your fax server will not run on Nano Server anytime soon. If there are loads that you need server core or full server for, we actually talked about the compatibility chart a few slides back, please continue to use them. But we believe that Nano Server will actually grow in terms of the roles and features it is capable of handling, and it will always be small. In other words, anything and everything that we add to Nano Server will be an optional package. And it will be just like Lego blocks. You have your core operating system, and you add only the pieces you need, which is, again, going back to the feedback we heard from our customers, they just wanted what we call now just enough OS. So your core image will never change. It'll always be that 400 meg image. And afterwards, you can just add the optional components that you need and only the optional components you need. I'd like to do some call to action and go do's. I talked about remote management and only remote management. If you or your organization are used to walking up to a server and doing management on that server, or RDPing into the server and doing that instead, please shift that mindset, that organizational mindset, to doing full remote management. So if today you're just using Hyper-V Manager, using RDP on the box itself, use Hyper-V Manager, target a remote machine, or use server management tools, which you can actually have an access to online. Look at our Nano Server blog. I think there are some of the resources are here in one of the slides as well. Deploy Nano Server, deploy your apps, deploy your tools. And if we go back to that developer experience, we also have scanning tools. If you develop tools or if you rely on tools that you own, you can actually run scanning tools to see which APIs are not available on Nano Server. And in many of those cases, we actually provide a replacement suggestion as well. Here are some very important links for you to give us feedback. Again, the one thing to remember for sure is nanoserver@microsoft.com. Please send us any and all your feedback. There is a user voice page as well. Please look at the ideas and suggestions that your colleagues have submitted, submit your own, or vote for one of your colleagues' suggestions as well. Here are some of the resources. So to wrap up, we talked about Nano Server as a deployment option, excuse me, as a deployment option in Windows Server 2016. We talked about Nano Server as a very tiny operating system compared to its siblings. We talked about how secure Nano Server is, how serviceable Nano Server is, and how manageable it is without a GUI, but fully remotely manageable using PowerShell, using WMI, using server management tools, and also using your existing tools that you're familiar with, whether it's Hyper-V Manager, Failover Cluster Manager, and so on and so forth. Nano Server is the future of server, and I think with that, I'll wrap up here, and we can take your questions. I'll move over to Studio B, and I'll be more than happy to field your questions. Thank you for watching.
Wow, what another cool session. It's Matt McSpirit back with you again, wrapping up the Nano Server session. So thanks to Rafa for covering all the cool stuff in Nano. Come on in, sir. Come on, join me. I don't want to sit by myself for ages. Good to see you, sir. Thank you very much for delivering that. I'm sure the audience...
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
We're very happy with the presentation. Take a breather. Take a drink.
Thank you.
We've had a load of questions in, as you can expect, and good stuff. All good questions. So I will grill you on a top 20 questions. I don't know if there's 20 or not. I haven't counted them all, but I'm sure there are.
I'd be more than happy to.
We've got plenty of time, so we're good. Firstly, before I go into these questions, we've done a lot of work together on building content, recording content for our field, for our viewers out there. Tell me a bit about where people can get started with NanoServe before we get into the specific questions. So I want to make sure that people know how they take the next step straight away.
Excellent question, as usual. So I think the first thing to do is to look at the resources in the slides. There is the Getting Started page on TechNet, mm-hmm. also identical on MSDN as well. There is the NanoServer blog. There is the user voice page. Mm-hmm. There is also, there are also other blogs that are related to NanoServer. So if you look at the IIS blog, for example, they talk about IIS on NanoServer. I try to link from our blog as well to those blogs, but in general, just do a search on NanoServer on TechNet, and you'll find more things. But start with the Getting Started, the blog, and the user voice page.
And I've heard there's an excellent training course that some people have built that would help.
Sorry about that. Yes, Microsoft Virtual Academy, absolutely. Yep. Do not pass that one up.
We spent about 8 hours in the studio recording that, so yeah.
Correct. It was like an 11-part, I believe, 11-part course.
11, 12, 13 parts, 13 modules, yeah, everything you need to know. So think about the session you've just seen with Rafa, and we've got a couple of other people. Andrew Mason's on there as well from the team. I want to give him credit. So all the things you saw today expanded across lots and lots of modules. So extra depth, extra knowledge, extra know-how, all available to you on the Microsoft Virtual Academy.
And Channel 9. I forgot Channel 9 as well. So there's a ton of videos on Channel 9 as well. So
yep, on the Channel 9.
We actually have our own. Matt created our own page for us. So we have a NanoServer page on Channel 9. So please check that out as well.
Cool. Right. So let's get into some of these questions and
give
the people the information they want. And just before we get to those questions, you will get the slide decks and you've made them available to people. So we will work on making available the slides if you want to consume them. So some questions on the remote server management tools.
Yes.
Will we see features, RSMT as the acronym, features incorporated into Server Manager or some other local solutions?
That's a good question. I think it's going to be the opposite. I mean, the idea is to have hopefully a one-stop shop, mm-hmm. as opposed to having go here for Hyper-V, go there for failover clustering, go here for network management, and go there. I think the idea is to centralize using SMT, using server management tools.
Right.
So I think it's the opposite that's going to happen. You're going to find that Hyper-V features will probably migrate slowly but surely into server management tools as opposed to the opposite.
Right, okay, so RSMT is gonna be the de facto way to manage.
The GUI way to manage, not just NanoServer, by the way, this is all of server.
Right, well, we've got a question on that, so hold that.
Excellent,
hold that
extra.
We've got a big question later on to that so we can clarify. So some of the roles and ways you can tune and customize NanoServer you went through in the presentation, for physical servers, for virtual machines, the roles and packages you can enable to tune it to be something specific.
Yep.
Can it be used as a DFS replication hub in the data center? So a question from John D.
I don't know.
Okay.
I can please send an email to nanoserver@microsoft.com and I'll find out.
Right, excellent. There you go, John D, nanoserver@microsoft.com. And that's everyone else as well. You can email that if you want. So we'll get back to you on that one. So DFS replication in the data center. So next question from Matt, not me. I've noticed that there are many /SIM v2 WMI classes missing from NanoServer. Is there a plan to support most of them eventually?
Excellent question, Matt. Not just because he's your namesake, but
thank you. Yep.
There is no blanket statement that we can make about supporting all and the entire namespace. This is on a need basis. In other words, if your business needs certain classes that you found are missing in NanoServer, then by all means, please contact us, tell us what the scenario is, and we'd be more than happy to comply with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so again, you could get in touch via the user voice, via nanoserver@microsoft.com, correct, as well as an email address. So that's correct. That's good stuff. So your feedback can genuinely, and this is not just in reflection of NanoServer, but broad Windows Server and a number of Microsoft products. If you do utilize the user voice platform to raise your concern or suggestions or feedback, the team are listening, you know, and you can actually influence the direction of the product going forward. There's still time, and into the future versions as well. So that was a bit about some of the WMI classes. If you're running NanoServer on physical hardware, mm-hmm, can you run, say, a certain OEM vendor's management agents for, say, health monitoring, aside, okay, from System Center? What would be the key requirements for that?
So tell us which vendor you deal with, because in other words, we have actually done, I think, a very good job so far, mm-hmm, of contacting our partners, our OEM partners, early on. We've, yep, been talking to them for almost 2 years now, and we have been telling them all along that NanoServer is it, this is our future, and we want to make absolutely sure that their tools, their management software, run on NanoServer.
Yep.
On Channel 9, you'll probably find videos of Five9 software, for example, which is non-Microsoft stuff, that has managing NanoServer. And we're working with other partners as well. Mm-hmm. We're working with hardware partners, we're working with ISVs. But if you're curious about a particular vendor, by all means, reach out to us and ask us, and tell us, here's what my business depends on. We use this software, this system, and we want to make sure that it actually runs on NanoServer as well.
Okay, so another question from Matt. I'm guessing Matt is slightly more towards the development side, based on this question. Do you know, and it's the same Matt as before, do you know if the .NET/Visual Studio team plans on supporting .NET Core as a build target? Because porting existing managed code has proven quite difficult, for example, binary PowerShell modules. What's your view on that?
I don't want to put words into my team's mouth, but
fine.
there are actually two parts to this question. If you're asking about PowerShell specifically, PowerShell Commander specifically, then I shouldn't be saying this, but if I get fired, maybe you'll find a job for me. But the PowerShell team is actually looking into this very issue, mm-hmm, and will definitely have a solution by the time we go live.
Okay.
And on the other hand, as well, the .NET Core team has done an awesome job as well of making sure that NanoServer is a first-class citizen for .NET Core. We are working on an experience together with Visual Studio, .NET Core, and NanoServer. But that's about all I can say right now.
So stay tuned for the future. And we'll, as things evolve, as things come to the bear, we'll make sure that we have updated materials and content available for you on the NanoServer channel on Channel 9. So you'll, and on Refa's blog as well. So you're always going to get the latest information. But at this point in time, that's all we can say at this point. Now, a strategic one, I suppose, is the best way I could classify this question. You showed the slide where it shows the journey we've been through Windows, through Windows Server specifically, with Server Core and Server with a GUI or Server with a desktop experience now. So the question from a chap called Kenneth Henry, why keep both NanoServer and Server Core?
Good question. NanoServer is not going to be a one-size-fits-all solution. NanoServer is very targeted for specific roles and features right now. Backward compatibility is not on its charter at all. In the design of NanoServer, backward compatibility was not a goal. So I gave the example of fax server, but let's take Exchange Server today. Today, Exchange Server cannot possibly run on NanoServer because of its full .NET dependency. Now, if the Exchange team, and I'm not saying it is, I'm just saying if the Exchange team decides at any point in time to migrate from full .NET to .NET Core to reap the benefits of the security and the lean, mean layer of .NET Core and the cross-platform ability, et cetera, by all means, then Exchange Server will be a candidate for NanoServer. So in other words, NanoServer says, hey, I can do a subset of the Win32 stack, and I can do .NET Core. If you guys can do that too, by all means, please come join me. We were going after certain teams, for example, Active Directory. If you go to User Voice, you'll find that the Active Directory, people just love NanoServer to become their domain controller. Mm. So we are talking to the Active Directory team, and we are trying to work through the issues of the .NET dependencies and so on and so forth. But in general, it's not going to be a one-size-fits-all. Yes, we're talking to the SQL Server team as well, but today you have to use Server Core for a SQL server. You have to use a server core for your Exchange server, for your fax server, and so on and so forth.
Or server with a desktop experience.
Correct, yeah. correct.
Just of those, of Nano server core.
Not Nano, exactly. Yeah. Nano can do IIS server, Nano can do DNS server, Nano can do Hyper-V server, storage server, and of course IIS as well, and do the born in the cloud application server.
So back to the remote server management tools. Jeff Woolsey in his first session touched on OMS, the Operations Management Suite, and we're going to have a session a bit later on in the day dedicated to OMS. But is there any integration between the remote server management tools and OMS?
Not that I know of.
No. Okay, not at
this
point.
That I know of.
That's not to say that servers being managed by the remote server management tools couldn't be monitored and have their logs and data analyzed by OMS, but today there's no integration at this point.
Correct. Not that I know of, no.
Okay. And this may be a dumb question from Rick. I don't think it's a dumb, there's no such thing as a stupid question. Can this be a print server? Is that one of the packages that's, I don't think it's one that's currently available? But
no.
Okay, no. There you go.
Not today.
Definitive no. There you go. Is there anything that can only be done by PowerShell in the management of Nano that can't be done with the remote server management tools?
Today, yes. So PowerShell is a full coverage. We can do, you can do anything and everything with PowerShell managing Nano server. The remote the server management tools are just starting. In other words, you can fully manage Hyper-V, for example, using PowerShell, just case in point. But you cannot do that today with server management tools. Tomorrow it's a different story, but today you cannot do that with server management tools.
Okay.
It's catching up though. In other words, the idea, the goal, the strategy is to have one-to-one correspondence. You want to do it through the command line through PowerShell remoting? Sure. You want to do that through GUI? Sure. You want to do a hybrid? That's available as well. The idea is that we're getting there one day.
And is there any RBAC within RSMT? So any administrative
role-based access.
So I can have access to everything, you can only have one server or whatever it may be.
I don't think it's there today, but it's I think it is in the plan. I'm not sure when though, but it's definitely one of the things that came up.
Okay, that was a question from Aiden, so stay tuned in the future for that one. So the question we kind of held back from before because you were going to answer it, but I wanted to make sure we answered Mike Brown's question specifically. Are the RSMT tools only available to manage Nano server, or can they connect to any Server 2016 install? But what about even previous versions of Windows Server?
I can answer the first part of the question. Yes, it's server management tools are there for all of managing all of server. Again, the idea is to combine, to centralize, to make easier, to streamline the management of server and not have to jump through 12, 13 tools to manage server, but to actually everything in one spot, one-stop shop, easy, familiar, rich graphical user interface. I don't know if we can go back to managing 2012 R2 and before. Please send an email to nanoserver@microsoft.com and I'll be more than happy to ask my colleagues who are driving the SMT effort.
Nice. So a gamer, as I think, has asked the question, which you may not know the answer to, but could I use Nano Server to make, and you used the term lean and mean before, a lean and mean Steam machine? And that's from a person called Taractor. I thought Steam was only on the desktop, but...
I don't think so.
No.
I honestly don't think so.
Oh, well. We mentioned Exchange, an example of something that wouldn't run on Nano Server today because of the dependencies. What about SharePoint?
Same thing.
That's a question from Stevie K. Yeah. So it would be up to the SharePoint team to refactor to take advantage of
That. The SQL Server team, the SharePoint team, the Exchange team, those are three of the examples that are on the radar, but definitely not on Nano Server today.
Right. Okay. And in your demo and throughout the presentation, Andre PKI saw ENUS as a locale that you were using. What about other locales and languages?
Excellent question. All available. So by the time we ship Windows Server 2016, all server languages will be available on Nano Server just as they are in the larger siblings in Server Core and Full Server.
Right. Okay. Now switching direction slightly, we've talked about obviously what Nano Server can do, what can run on it, some application platform information as well in the presentation. But what about protecting it? So what are the backup options and/or requirements for Nano? What can we talk about there?
We'll have more to say in say a month or two, but we've been working with the backup vendors on the story, and we're probably going to be publishing a story very soon. we are working with the backup vendors. We want to make sure that your whatever backup solution your business has decided to adopt will actually continue to work for NanoServer as well. Hyper-V has introduced new APIs to enable backup using the RCT APIs, and we're leveraging those on NanoServer as well.
Right, but for third parties, they could tie into those APIs as well.
Absolutely.
Could they take an agent-based approach, assuming it was developed as an agent suitable for NanoServer?
Yes, they can, but that means they need to port their agent to run on NanoServer as well.
And I suppose that answers the next question from Hardware Geek. With NanoServer, how do you run a third-party antivirus product, for example, Symantec? There are others available, obviously, as well. Same kind of thing. You would assume Symantec would deliver their agent specific for NanoServer.
For sure. We actually have been working them very closely. I've actually met with all of these companies personally, and we've talked to them about their strategy for NanoServer. And they're totally on board. They absolutely are supporting NanoServer as well.
And I'm guessing you would, let's zip forward into the future and assume that all of these organizations have built agents that are, or some form of package that's supported with NanoServer. I'm assuming you would build your initial image with that in from the start, and therefore when you deploy your NanoServers from they've got the AV stuff in there already.
Absolutely.
And it was just a case of getting the definitions updated.
Absolutely. So. You basically master and craft your golden image, and then you basically deploy that image across the data center.
Okay. Somebody went to a recent user group meeting. It's a chap called Surgeon. I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. They were asked if NanoServer will get ADDS as a role. He doesn't think so, but will it get it?
You were
chatting to the Active Directory team. So.
Yes. The question is when. You will probably not get it by Windows Server 2016 RTM. By the time we GA, it's not going to be there, but we're definitely working with the teams. This is the top of the user voice, I believe, all of the Active Directory features, including ADDS.
Yeah, there's quite a few questions that relate to that. Will it have this role? Will it have this role? And I think at this point in time, it's fair to say that it's intentionally not got everything. But as people say, well, we would really like this makes perfect sense for NanoServer in the future. You know, keep contacting us on user voice, keep voting for the existing submissions on user voice. We'll respond and if there's enough votes on those kind of areas,
exactly,
then the team will work to get that implemented. It's not just about the NanoServer team, though. It is about the workload team specifically as well, the Active Directory team, the DHCP team, and so on. There's lots of groups in Microsoft that have to get this working together.
This is how we got IIS and DNS, by the way. DNS server and IIS were user voice requests, and we actually basically talked to the teams. And we had nothing but excellent cooperation from the other teams as well. And this is how you can actually run IIS and DNS server on NanoServer today. So please continue to vote on user voice.
So what about the remote server management tools? How do people get hold of that? Is it something they can use today? Is it something that they will have to wait for? Is it a download? Explain to people.
Another excellent question. So the best thing to do is to hit the NanoServer blog on TechNet. And there is a blog written by my colleague, Kriti. She basically explained exactly how to run server management tools in your organization. For now, what I can tell you is that you need an Azure subscription, that's for sure. For now, we have heard also feedback that customers want to run this on premises and not use Azure. We've taken in the feedback, and of course, if you have any other feedback, by all means, please give it to us as well. But the blog should be able to get you started immediately.
So a follow-up question from Stephen. It looked like RSMT was part of Azure Console. Yeah, that's right, today. Will it be available for private clouds via Azure Stack?
I don't know, but I'll be more than happy to get you that answer. I don't want to make assumptions, but again, this is what we're investing in, so I can only assume that this will be the story for graphical management. But I don't want to make any assumptions. I'll get it from the horse's mouth.
Okay.
Just send me mail, and I'll get the right answer.
So what about open source and NanoServer? What's the story around perhaps running Linux on NanoServer as a workload, as a guest? Is there anything special that you need to be aware of?
For now, you can basically run NanoServer in a container. So if you can, we're working hard with Docker, actually. We have an excellent partnership with Docker. We're working with Docker to have full support for Docker in NanoServer. And once you have that, you can basically run NanoServer on Linux, and you can do a whole bunch of things. This is the new Microsoft, where interoperating with other platforms and technologies is basically what we do.
Yeah, and you could run Linux virtual machines on a Nano Hyper-V host. There'd be no problem there.
Absolutely.
Work
what you can run anything you can run on Hyper-V on Nano Server's Hyper-V layer as well. So.
Yeah. And specific, I suppose, for Nano Server and networking, is there anything specific you need to know about NIC teaming on Nano Server today?
Yes, there is one type of NIC teaming that's supported on Nano Server, and of course, I'm trying to remember what it was called.
Is it switch embedded teaming?
Exactly, switch embedded teaming.
So I'm here for just
thanks for being here.
I'm racking my brain there.
Switch embedded teaming. SET, yes.
And if you're not familiar with switch embedded teaming, there's loads of information online about it. It's a new form of teaming that's introduced in Windows Server 2016 for in the platform, more integrated with the Hyper-V vSwitch, and that's supported on Nano Server. I think we're pretty much, we've pretty much got through a lot of the questions. Nano Server won't be cool until it has an IRC server and client, winky face. So that's from Matt, who we answered his Visual Studio question before. Can it run Minecraft server? Would it be able to run Minecraft server?
I don't know what the dependencies are. If you tell me what the Minecraft dependencies are, I'll be more than happy to answer that question.
Good stuff. Azure Stack deployment on Nano Server, a little bit early to say.
Azure Stack deployment on Nano Server, is it too early to say?
I don't know, is it? You tell me. I'm not. It'll be you that gets in trouble.
Nano Server is the future of Windows Server, so.
Excellent political answer. Love it. Right, so we're rapidly approaching the next session, which builds on some of the stuff that you talked about, containers. You introduced containers being a supported platform on Nano Server. And we've got Taylor Brown, again, a good friend, colleague from Microsoft, who's going to walk us through containers in the Microsoft platform. And to build up, I want to make sure that you have a view on the containers question. Remember that you can win tech rewards. What are the two container runtimes built into Windows Server 2016? It's a bit easy. Your question was a little bit harder, actually, I have to say. And remember your answer with hashtag TechNetVC, hashtag contest. And don't forget about using Twitter to show us where you're watching from, again, using the hashtag TechNetVC. And you've got to be following MS_ITPro. You can follow us, obviously, optionally. That's not related to the contest, but there you go. So there's your question for containers. What are the two container runtimes built into Windows Server 2016? I'm not going to ask you about containers now in case you give away the answer. But loads of cool stuff that Taylor's going to cover around what containers are, what the different types are, so you can answer your question, how you manage them with things like PowerShell, with Docker, and so on. So loads of great stuff. So all that's left for me to do really is to thank Rafa for his session. Hopefully you found it useful. We will try and get through the rest of the questions as they come in offline. Our team of MVPs and our technical evangelists are really helping us with that as well. So we'll try and get answers to you if we haven't. I apologize, we've not had time to get to your question. But hopefully we're ready for switching over to Taylor. Not much more for us to talk about at this point.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
No, thanks.
Always a pleasure.
Good. Thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And don't forget, check out the Microsoft Virtual Academy for lots of in-depth learning on Nano Server. Don't forget to check out the Channel 9 page on Nano Server, the Nano Server channel. What's your blog address? blogs.technet.com.
/B, I think.
/B/NanoServer.
Exactly.
You'll find it. Use your favorite search
engine. /B/blog/NanoServer.
Yeah, so. It's catchy. So yeah, just search for Nano Server blog. And the TechNet, there is an aka.ms link for your TechNet documentation. Is it aka.ms/nanoserver? I think takes you to the.
I think so.
Takes you to the TechNet. TechNet,
and then there's also an MSDN equivalent of that page as well.
Yeah. So loads of cool resources to help get you started. Lots of useful information in this session, and in the next session, I'm sure containers and on NanoServer will come up as part of the session as well.
Yep.
So I think we're just about ready to flick over to Taylor.